Evening, everyone. We'll start the TechNet in about 1 minute. W2TTT. Evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2 Tango Tango Tango, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Any station is welcome to participate. Before we start, are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2 Bravo Alpha Romeo. Okay, mercifully nothing heard. So, let's see. The TechNet, how do we operate? We operate weekly on 146.955, the two-meter repeater of the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club. It's located in Alpine, New Jersey. And we operate for the purpose of exchanging ideas related to amateur radio, electronics, telecommunications, computers, and pretty much anything that things. So pretty much anything you want to talk about if you really work it right. So you do not need to be a member of the Bergen Amateurs Association in order to participate. You do, however, need to have an amateur radio license that allows you to transmit on the 2-meter amateur radio band. The other thing you probably would like to know is other ways of getting in. If you can't get in on 2 meters using a PL of 141.3, you can get in via Echolink. And the Echolink connection is K2 Foxtrot Juliet-L. That's Echolink, K2, Kilo 2, Foxtrot Juliet-L for link. And we do leave opportunities in for stations to check in via Echolink. On that note, let's do that first. Let's talk about checking in. The way you check in is you give your call sign, your name, and then you indicate any of the following: that you have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. Now you ask, well, why would I check in if I had none of the above? The answer is because we are interested in knowing who's listening so that we can focus the topics on your level of interest, your capabilities of interest, and frankly, sometimes your expertise. We actually look for the participants of the net to add to the stew, as they say. So, with no further ado, let's get to the stew. Stations whose call signs begin with Alpha, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and indicate whether you have a question or comment or none of the above. Please call K2BAR. Brady, nothing heard. Let's try Whiskey stations. Stations whose call signs begin with Whiskey, please call K2BAR.
This is W2JEK, done, no comments.
Alrighty. So W2JEK, very good. All of a sudden Pete gets real busy. Every time I try to start this net, something happens. But okay, very good, Don. No questions, no comments. I think you have an announcement, though, don't you?
I'll wait till everybody gets here.
Roger. I mean, I wasn't looking for it now. But yes, I think you do have an announcement. All right, very good. And, or comment, if you will. Any other whiskey stations? Okie dokie. Let's try the ever-popular November stations. Please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question, comment, both or none of the above. Please call K2BAR. Alrighty. That was a hit. Let's get to the kilos. Okay, let's be very specific here. Stations whose call signs begin with the letter kilo followed directly by the number 2. Please call K2BAR.
K2ZO. And I have a question.
Good evening, James. Okay, any other kilo 2s?
No questions.
Okay, Tony, I have you in here with no questions. Who is the station who just doubled with Tony? Oh, it's that station with no audio. Okay. I hope things get better for you. We'll leave a pause for you next time. Any other Kilo 2s?
K2JSL, David, no questions, no comments, no expertise.
Yeah. And you're also full of it. Hi, David. Alrighty. Very good. So we have one comment, one question so far. It's very good. Alright. I have a Windows 7 question, but I'll just put that up there. I'm looking for drivers for a Panasonic Toughbook CF29. But we'll talk about that next, as it were, in the studio. I'm just giving people some heads up because I often don't get to post my questions. So, any other Kilo 2s? Any other Kilos?
K2BARs, this is KC2PYB. Richard, no questions or comments at this time.
All right, Richard, nice to hear you. Nice chatting earlier, too. All right, any other Kilos?
KC2ORX, nothing to talk about. Just listening, but going back into the work in about 5 minutes.
Oh, Robert, man. Evil, evil, evil. But you got to work. All right, any other Kilos?
And Stuart, KC2SQP with a question.
Oh, goody. We have a bounty of questions tonight. Good. Very good. Good evening, Stuart, KC2SQP. Got your question registered. And let's see. Any other Kilos? Alrighty, any other station, any call sign format, any call sign, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, whether or not you have a question, comment, both or none of the above. Please call K2BAR.
K2BAR, November 2, Yankee Mike Echo Mobile, no comment.
Sorry, November Mike Echo, is it?
November 2, Yankee Mike Echo.
How did I screw that up? And your name, sir?
Name is Ricky. Don't know how long I'll be in here. I'm up by Cold Spring heading north on a Taconic.
Okay, Ricky, welcome aboard. Where's home for you?
Half the week in Dobbs Ferry, New York, and the other half up in Lake George, New York. I just finished work, so I'm heading back north.
Wow, so your real home is Lake George, huh?
Well, in a couple of months, I'm retiring, so my call letters will come back to Dobbs Ferry.
Good for you. All righty. Welcome aboard. Any other stations?
This is NS2K, Jim, and no question at this point. I'm about to go not mobile, but not for another couple minutes.
Okay. Very good, Jim. Anybody else? Okay, well, let's get right to it. While we have everybody here, let me take Don's announcement / comment. W2JEK, K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR, and the net W2JEK. I run the VE testing, and Barry will be running a VE test session on February 19th. That's a Friday night at 7 p.m. at the Westwood Regional High School, which is located on 701 Ridgewood Road in the township of Washington, New Jersey. And that will take place at 7 p.m. And if anybody has any questions, please get in touch with me. Back to net, W2JK.
That's a week from tomorrow?
That's a roger.
Okay, very good. That's excellent, excellent. Was there another station in there? Alrighty. Very good. That's excellent, Don. I actually already have a question from somebody, the mother of a young man who took the ham radio course last spring, was not successful, did not want to retest. He was higher, he was a younger kid, but only missed by, I think, one or two questions. And he's been studying and wants to study some more, and I gave him some more materials by his mother's email yesterday. And he's planning to either take a test between now and April or come to that April course and take the test session that night. he may retake the course, we'll see. So I thought that was interesting. He was inspired, by the way, because a 17-year-old kid who's an Eagle Scout from his troop did get his license at that course and was just awed by the kid's interest in all things technological, and he's been motivated after going to his Eagle Court of Honor, so I thought that was kind of neat. Alrighty, let's get right to the questions at hand. K2ZO, Jim, your question, sir. K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR. This is K2ZO. Alrighty, I'm about to start a little project here. What I want to do is build a headphone amplifier to use in contests and stuff like that. After operating a few field days and a few other contests, it's become quite evident that operating sometimes with another operator who has different hearing than you is really difficult with just a Y cable and headphones. And what I want to do is use an amplifier and drive about two or three pair of headphones. And what I'm thinking about doing is using an LM386. I know those things go take off sometimes. I'm thinking about putting some kind of a load on it and then using a couple of pots and go out to a few other things. Let me drop it here. I think there was something in one of the QSTs or one of the hints and kinks about doing it, but I did locate a very low power 386. It's designed for battery operation, and that's what I want to do. Put this thing in a box with a battery so we won't get any RF with any leads and things like that. And it's very low current while it's in standby. You wouldn't even need almost an on-off switch for it. But anyway, I was wondering if anybody's ever done anything like this, and maybe I'm going about it the wrong way. But basically, the idea would be is to, while you're operating there with somebody next to you, both of you have got a set of cans on. Maybe the impedance might be a little different on both, so the game is different. But to have the ability to just bring it up, I thought what I could do was boost it up with the 386 and then use voltage dividers, you know, with pot to get the level. I just thought that idea would work. Any ideas? Back to that. K2ZO.
Comment.
Go ahead, Jim.
NS2K. Yeah, I had run across, and I've used on a number of occasions, public service stuff and such, some attenuators, little, you know, it's just a pot in the wire. I know it's not exactly what you're talking about, but it does solve the same problem. Separately attenuated two-way split, and that way, basically turn them both up and find the comfortable level on the amplifier on the radio, and then the one that's too loud turn down, and it works quite nicely. It's a little stereo thing. I don't remember what it costs, less than $10, I think, from Ratcheck.
W2JEK. Go ahead, Doc.
Yeah, okay, Jim, last year at Field Day, I brought along an audio filter, an external audio filter, and I was trying to use that on the 80-meter tent there, and I was working, I think, with Frank or Warren, and the RF from the Gota station, which is right in the next table in that tent, was getting into the audio filter. And finally dispensed with the audio filter and figured I'd do without it. So maybe what Jim is saying is right. If you could just have a volume, you know, just a pot of volume control on each, for each headset, that would solve the problem. Because if you start messing around with amplifiers and RF gets into it one way or the other, well, you think of all the RF that's floating around there, I think you're going to buy yourself a heartache with that. So maybe just a simple thing with a couple of pots and a couple of jacks and a cord to go into the output on the radio might be the answer. Back to W2JK.
H2ETN. Wow, Andy, go ahead.
Dressed as a gym. There are many, many, many op amps around. Most of them use dual supplies, which I realize might be a problem. But there is a chip that I've been using for some time, which is kind of nice. It takes 1 or 2 volts in and gives you plus and minus 5 or 10 out. One chip, no external parts to speak of. So that might be of interest with when you do select any whatever amplifier you decide to use. The better ones are all complementary supplies, plus and minus.
Don't need that. This has already got it built in the chip by select.
Okay. Got to mention it.
Okay. Any other comments from anybody?
I have some more comments.
Go ahead, Jim, and then I have one for you when you're ready.
Okay. The problem with paralleling up headphones, and I can say this again from experience, is everybody's headphones are different. You've got people with high impedance phones, people with very low impedance phones, and people with impedance phones. Okay, now take the situation that I, where I had a Y cable coming out of the receiver, had this thing, and then we had someone plug in a 4-ohm speaker. Whatever. Well, a 4-ohm impedance type headphone. And I was using a 600 ohm. Well, this hogged it all. Later on, I realized that internally, in the Kenwood, they already have an adapter for phones. They give you the 4, you plug in the headphone jack, you've already got a pad, which is designed for headphones of 600 ohm impedance or something like that. So that's what had the problem, and that's going to be one of the problems that you're going to run into. So that's why I thought I'd boost it, put it in an aluminum box, its own battery, that way I'd keep the RF out of it. Back to that.
Yeah, I think that might work. Remember the advice you gave me, though, about bypassing and ferrites, right? You're going to do all that, right?
Not going to need to do that because I've got it in a self-contained box. I'll put filters on the input and the output in the box, and it'll be a battery in there. This device that I've chosen only takes a 9-volt battery. It's a low-voltage version of an LM336. It's an NJM386. I just bought 4 of them for $4, and so it's going to be interesting to see to play with this thing. But that's the whole idea, and that's why I've asked the question here. Back to that.
I would give you a different approach. I would actually give each, if you're going to go down that road, I would give each person, if you will, their own channel to adjust their own audio. So, you know, do a high impedance input to make sure that they don't load each other down, but to feed multiple amplifiers, and then each person can adjust the output to their own liking. I do like what Jim suggested, but I will tell you that they do cross-load, and there's not enough isolation to make up for differences, or worse, depending on what the other guy is using in the way of a headset, for as he adjusts the attenuator, the inline attenuator, it will magically change what you hear, the level you hear in your ear on your side of the Y cable. So I think that problem still exists. One of the tough questions I had was just to try to find a way to, you know, in the amplifier I was looking at, I was actually thinking about putting, you know, using that in a similar mode, you know, if I wasn't driving a stereo, you know, a Sirius receiver with it, I would drive multiple sources together, bridge them together, and then allow you to select your own personal output, use the left channel for one, right channel for the other. The problem I see with that is this is not a low current device, will require external power. but you can run it really, really low at 12 volts or even 9 volts, although it says 12 to 18, but I think it'll run at 9. And again, the problem is that, it'll give you low distortion at that point in the curve, which is nice, but you might want to look, I would suggest building them as separate channels, each one with their own chip. Does that make sense?
Well, that's why I bought four of them. But what I'm thinking of is that there's enough gain to make this thing work. Remember now, and this is what people don't realize, that if you go over and look at the headphone jack, that headphone jack where you put your headphones in, at least in my Kenwoods, is not the 4-ohm speaker lead. It's got a pad on there, and it's got series resistors, and it's also got some tricks so that you can use a stereo phone and drive each side. So, as I say, if you start plugging in earphones there and start powering them up, you run a problem. So that's why, pull it out of there at a 600-ohm level or whatever that's padded down, put it into the amplifier, and if the amplifier's got enough gain, now, out of the amplifier, all I need to do is take, say, 600-ohm pots and hang the headphones on that, and that's what I want to experiment with. So we'll see. Might be very easy to do with just one thing. I to remember that someone indeed did something like that in Hinson Kinks or one of the QST publications, but for the life of me, I can't remember where it is. And I got a good memory, so we'll work on that. Back to
W2JEK.
Go ahead, Don.
Okay, one thing you got to be thinking about here is that you're talking, one radio has a 600-ohm output, another radio might have a 4-ohm output, and you don't know what radio you're going to be dealing with at any particular time. That's part one of the problem. Part two of the problem is if you have different headsets. Now, again, you don't know, people bring their own headsets. The closest thing I've come to something like this is when we were giving the code test at Barra. We used a cassette player for the cassette tape that had the, and we had multiple headphones hooked up in parallel, using 8-ohm Walkman type headphones. And we'd adjust the volume to suit people, and it seemed to work pretty well for most people. And then again, we were dealing with a set impedance, I think it was an 8-ohm output probably on that cassette player. I still have the thing downstairs. I have to look at it. And because we had 8-ohm headphones, so there was, everything was like 8 ohms, and we just more or less had them in parallel. So that, that sort of sets the standard, sort of, as everything was the same impedance. The only other thing you can do is, if you had thought of, if you knew you had a high impedance or a low impedance, where you could set in a matching transformer to deal with this. You make it like a 1,000 ohm to 8 ohm matching transformer. It's a small thing. I think Radio Shack was selling them for a while. Maybe that would be part of the answer. And try to keep away from active devices. That's what I think might be causing a problem. But knowing what you're dealing with, Jim, I think it's going to be the, what radio you're going to use it on, and et cetera. With that, back to net. W2JK.
Okay. Jim, answer the question.
Okay. If you look at any of the modern radios out there, their output to drive the headphones is not 8 ohms or 4 ohms. It's 8 ohms or 4 ohms in some kind of a load, and then series resistors. So you already have attenuated there. Now that's when you start running into problems, when you start putting in various different phones on there that have different impedances, and it pulls it down. The idea is that somebody's going to take this little box, plug it into his headphone jack on his radio, which is going to be padded down and set up to drive, say, 600 ohm load. And then we're going to go out and then plug all kinds of stuff into that. So that was the whole idea of it, to avoid those problems that we had. And I'm thinking that will work. The only thing is, of course, we may get some RF into it, but I doubt it. From other things I've done that I've kept, you know, contained, I've done quite well. But the whole idea is that when I was operating a couple of times, the other person I was operating with couldn't hear the stations because he needed the gain up so high, and again, just with a Y connector, that I couldn't stand putting the headphones on. So that was the whole idea for doing all this, that we'd be able to set it up and make it work with all kinds of things. Well, it'll be an interesting little project for Kit Night, and we'll see what happens when we get a couple of these things, and see if we can just drive a couple of different headphones and see if it does work. Back to that, K2ZO.
Alrighty. Well, that's good news. That's good news. I know you don't want to do the... Well, a lot of guys don't want you to do the active part, but I like the idea of the, by the, you know, the amplifiers. I would take it one step further, Jim, and I would think about looking for a port on the back that has a you know, an adjustable output. In other words, one that will respond to whatever you do, or one that's active in all modes. Either that or one that has a good baseline level such you don't care, and essentially remote your volume control to your gizmo box for each person. I would make it to match your radio and leave the front connection entirely free, because that way that becomes a convenience thing for you to use as you'd see fit in the normal case, and then let the hangers-on and or other devices that you may have buffer off the back. It's just a thought. Let's see. What else? The other, I had a similar problem, by the way, in sort of a kind of in reverse, and that was running multiple radios headphone outputs into a single set of headphones. And, you know, it's easy when you do, you know, radio left, radio right. It's easy when you do, you know, A or B radios. It's harder when you decide to put both audio into both ears at the same time. You get some odd products. I've played with it a couple of different ways. I like the way they handle the buffering with the Rig Blaster Duo, but the amount of money it costs, it damn well better be wonderful. What I don't like is it doesn't have a left-right feature, and so I haven't worked that out. I mean, you can set it up that way, but it will forever be left or right unless you then bridge them across, and then you'll have, you know, qualitative problems when you do that. So, I do like the way they do it. If you select both to both, you select both a radio A and radio B. It comes through very nicely mixed, very low distortion product, et cetera. It's nice. Anyway. Anybody else have any final comments on this episode, or continuing comments?
2JEK.
Don, go right ahead.
Two things. One thing is, if you wanted, you're talking about a phone jack, and there's also unusual on the radio, might have an external speaker jack, which would be compatible with an 8-ohm phones. Now, if you're dealing with 8-ohm phones and 8-ohm headsets, and you will have 8-ohm headsets, like Walkman headsets, that might be part of the answer. At least you could have a known output there. Maybe you get more output from that external speaker jack, and you could deal with it with just the resistor controls. Gordon, one thing you might remember in the telephone business, we had a thing called a two-wire, 8-way data bridge for data lines, and we fed... One of these 8 legs was the input leg, and then there were 7 outputs that we sent data out over to various
sources, or vice versa, receive data and send it out to a master leg that way. And we used, it was just a resistor bridge, and we either had attenuators or 89 type attenuators or 227 type amplifiers to control the levels. And that was part of our telephone experience. And it sounds like something that would be a spinoff on that. Back to that, W2JK.
News for you, Don, if you match the impedances halfway reasonably, you could use that.
Well, that's a 2-way bridge, is a 600 ohm bridge, but you have to feed it with 600 ohms and take the outputs at 600 ohms, convert them to 4 ohms or whatever, or 600 ohms directly.
Exactly. And as Jim pointed out, some people show up with 600 ohm headsets, other people show up with 4 ohm headsets. You're never quite sure what you're going to do, what you're going to see. Alrighty. I could also give you one other suggestion, Jim. If you want to go to the powered solution, you might consider a variant on what we've discussed, and that is take your 9 volts off of the accessory pin of your radio and power it off the radio that way. I think that might work well, especially if you don't need a lot of power, but just enough to keep things juiced into a set of headsets. That might work out well for you as well and relieve you of the battery issue. One of the things, I've thought about noise-canceling headsets and things like that, and the whole thought of having a headset with a battery in it, just or any audio system with an autonomous battery that I have to remember to replace at the worst possible moment, it sounds incredibly unappealing. K2ZO, K2BAR.
K2BAR, K2ZO. Taking power from the radio is the worst thing you want to do in a field day or VHF contest situation. That's just going to guarantee you're going to get RF in there. You would never want to do that, ever, even in your operation. Putting it in with a system that draws very little current, I'm talking about using a 9-volt battery that would last for six months. So this stuff doesn't draw very much until you hit it a little bit. So it can sit, you only need an on-off switch. That's how low it current consumption is at no signal. So that part I'm not worried about. I can do all that part. But, run into the situation where here you've got a jack that's already got a pad. You've got your 4 ohms, and then you've got a series, 600 ohm resistor going into the things that you're plugging into. Now you plug a set of 4 ohm phones in there while you're paralleled up with 600 ohm phones, which was what happened, and you got no signal. That's what I'm trying to kind of get away from. So what I'm duplicating is an amplifier, not going to put any attenuators as such the way it's done in the Kenwood and ICOMs to drive earphones. And then I'll have a separate for each one. We'll see. It'll be fun. And I'll bet I can make it work, one way or the other. Back to that.
Okay. Learn something every day. Let's see. Related topic, just one quick question. Does anybody have a 6-inch by, let's say, 2-inch by 2-inch or bigger aluminum box that they would like to part with? I need one. Gosh, that worked well. Okay. It was just a thought. I don't have an aluminum chassis that's small. I have the best I could come up with was a five-sided plastic box with aluminum faceplate.
I am loath to use it for this application that we talked about last week, but anyway, we shall see. What else? All right, let's go to, let's first of all check some more check-ins, and then we'll go to the next question. Any other check-ins to the net, please call K2B Air.
K2AMI with a box.
Oh, yay. Okay. Awesome. What size is it?
It's 5-inch by 2-inch by 2-inch. Would that fit?
No, alas, my circuit board is 6 inches across. But, I mean, I've thought about cutting this board in half and then kind of resolving the traces, but, man, no, it's not going to work, Tony, but thank you.
I'll continue to look.
Well, that's very thoughtful of you. I really do appreciate it. The only downside of this amplifier that had I known, I would have bought two single channel ones and made them my own stereo arrangement. But anyway, let's see. We've done the other check-ins. Okay, one other point. On the 21st, we have a couple of events coming up. One is the Bergen County FM Association meeting. It's the annual meeting. It's at the Red Cross, where we meet, and dues will be taken there. If you'd like to send them in advance, that's even fine too. Bob W. B2AIU will be happy to take your funding. And what do you call it? On the same night is the annual meeting for the Chestnut Ridge Club, which is sponsors of this repeater. And if you wish to attend, you're welcome to. There's a modest fee for the dinner, and there's also club dues available as well. But we have the two clubs that have repeaters that support us, support our nets, are both meeting on the same night. And Bob is a member of Barra and the other two clubs. I wonder which one he's going to. Actually, I know which one he's going to, but I won't say. But I'll be eating dinner with him. I'll say that much. Grin, grin. Anyway, encourage you all to support the repeaters that support our nets and give us fine service throughout the year. And anyway, let's see. The next thing would be the question from, let's see, Stuart, KC2SQP. Go right ahead, sir. K2BAR.
K2BAR, this is KC2SQP. A few quick questions. One, what's the date again of the BCMFA? And repeat slowly the Echolink station when you first came on. You mentioned the frequency. I have another question after that. Back to the net.
Okay, both the Bergen County FM Association and the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club are having their meetings, their annual meetings, on Sunday the 19th, I believe it is. Or Sunday the 21st, pardon me, Sunday the 21st. One is at the Red Cross for BCFMA, and the, what do you call it, the New York Steakhouse in Ramsey, I think, or Mala, I'm not sure which, it's on Route 17, for the Chestnut Ridge group. That's the first set of questions you had. And let's see, the next question was the echo link for this repeater is Kilo 2 Foxtrot Juliet dash L for link. Kilo 2 Foxtrot Juliet dash L as in Lima for link.
Alright, there's KQ2SQP, that's fine. Next question. I have a Kenwood TMV71A. If I want to pick up a rechargeable portable battery, what would be your recommendation? Back to that.
Okay. Generally something bigger than the factory battery if it's available. That's my general rule. Having said that, there are two popular vendors
There's AA Batteries and Batteries America. I think it's is it AA Batteries or A&A Batteries? I'm trying to remember now. Can someone help me out here and throw me a lifeline?
What's the model number?
Richard?
I mean, Stuart?
KC2SQP. I have a Kenwood. It's TMV718 is an alpha.
That's a mobile radio, not an HT.
Definitely mobile, not an HT.
Okay, so how many watts output is the radio?
Unfortunately, I don't have it in front of me. I'm at Ron's house using his radio.
All right, let's go back again. What's the model again?
Both bands, but 50 watts out. Yeah, maybe both bands.
71A Kenwood Mobile.
Okay, and you want to be able to operate this radio with at least some degree of surety for some period of time without having it drop out. Are you willing to roll the battery around, or do you want to be able to carry it like in a steroidal lunchbox?
I can carry it around with me.
Well, from my own experience, I found that these 38 ampere hour steel lead acid batteries, they look like a motorcycle battery, but they're not liquid. Work very, very well. The one thing I can say is that you should operate them with as low power as possible, and you know, dim the lights and things like that on the front panel when you're using it. That's always a cool thing to do to extend your battery life. The other option is to get one of the Optima, I mean, they're expensive. These are really expensive. Get an Optima deep cycle battery. I think those are the yellow tops. I think those are the Optima yellow tops. But the ones you use for like a trolling motor or something like that in a boat. And that would be a little heavier. It wouldn't be like carrying around a truck battery. They're not cheap. They're in the $130, $140 class. But what's nice about those is that they're meant to be power cycled. You can float charge them lightly, and they'll give you a lot of service. That's something to think about with a radio like that. Anybody else have any comments, contradictory or otherwise, please call K2BAR. Yeah, that battery's a bit bigger than the 38 ampere hour ones, but they'll be on the order of 100 or so ampere hours, Stuart. I think you'd like that a lot better. So do consider that in your analysis. The worst case is they make Stanley makes some really nice. Make some really nice toolboxes that you can use to carry around the battery in the bottom and, the accessories and all those other things, and it kind of wheels around, and so that way you don't have to lug it, you can wheel it around. You might have to lug it up a staircase or not, but even then you can clunk it down up and down a staircase if you so desire. It's something to think about. Anybody else have any comments about that before I hand it back to Stuart?
S2K?
And S2K go.
If you remember Daryl, sometimes known as Tonto, if you talk to Mr. G here, he has some truly steroidal batteries, severely steroidal batteries that he occasionally has, that are surplus out of cell sites, somewhat used, but still very serviceable. Anyway, depends on how big you want to have to carry around. and the question is, with that radio, do you need the up converter I know some radios, like the ICOM 7000 in particular, is very, very persnickety about input voltage, and the power drops off precipitously as you drop below 13.8 volts. Anyway, back to that. NS2K.
I was going to get to that. I just figured let's get it with those batteries. All right. Good comment, Jim. The one thing I will suggest about that is that about the batteries that Daryl has been known to get in the past, and from what I understand, he's no longer actively working. He's retired, as he says. So if he's retired, that means that battery source may be dried up. I have one of those batteries, but Jim, if you and I want to carry it, we're not going to want to carry it very far. They are kind of on the large size, and they're really, really heavy. I mean, they're the best part of 200 pounds. So I think that might exceed what Stuart had in mind, but I could be wrong. I intend to take one or two of those if I get a second one to the National Jamboree this summer. Whether or not I can get a solar panel, I'm going to think about taking two of those with me. Another subject is voltage boosters. Stuart, what Jim was referring to is that some batteries sag a bit when you put them under high current load, such as a 50-watt radio might provide after a time. And so the phase lock loop comes unlocked, and the radio kind of just gets a little goofy in its behavior. So you put a little booster on there that basically goes between the 12-volt battery and the 13.8 device that locks on 13.8 or whatever you set it to until you've drained the battery down to a point where you preset it to a threshold where it'll just cut off outright. But, for the batteries we're talking about in most operations, you wouldn't reach that threshold before being able to recharge it. So that's what we're referring to. So KC2SQP, K2BAR.
K2BAR, KC2SQP. I like the idea of that optimum V-cycle battery. I could use it on the boat. That's what I was looking to use it for, actually. And I appreciate all the help from everyone, but now I will go out and look around, and that's a good idea about that V-cycle battery. I'm glad you guys brought it up in all the other comments. KC2SQP, back to the net.
All right, since you're going down that road and it's for a boat, let me give you one other piece of advice. Get as much battery as your space, your carrying ability, and your wallet can handle. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
And you don't have to stick with Optimum. I mean, Optimum makes a good battery. They have yellow, blue, and red, and I forget which ones are which. But two of them can be used in a nominally deep cycling manner, but one is specifically designed to really drive trolling motors and all sorts of stuff for really long periods of time and really take abuse in that regard. And I just can't remember if it's the yellow or the blue. It's not. I'm almost certain it's not red, but I just can't remember. And you certainly can look up Optima on the website, and you'll have your answer in 30 seconds. But their largest battery is not by far the largest you can find, and if you can find a container to wheel it around in, and that's also convenient for you to use, transferring from shore to boat, boat to shore, and use for other applications, then go for even a bigger battery. I would strongly recommend that. The voltage booster that I like, I think several others do as well, is the N8XJK boost regulator. A couple of different models. They are also pricey, by the way. But you're trying to keep, hundreds of dollars of radio equipment going for long periods of time under cruddy power conditions. I know you're using it for FM, so there won't be a lot of distortion, but there may be a lot of, it may come unglued and just not operate. I know using a Pro 3 off a battery source, the boost regulator keeps nice clean voltage on the input and keeps you from sending spurs from here to hell and gone. So that's something else to think about as well.
KC2SQP, K2BAR. I want to thank everyone again for all the information and on that voltage booster. I really appreciate the help on that. Back to the net.
2K.
2K go.
Looking at Optima, their website, OPTIMA, Deep Cycle Battery, you can Google them, whatever. There's a red top, which is a starting battery. It's probably not what you're looking for. They're all absorbent glass mat AGM batteries. Their yellow or blue seem to be the Deep Cycle versions of them. And I'm trying to... So far, I haven't seen the big difference between yellow and blue other than size. And it may be just the size difference, how they classify them. Maybe you remember Gordon. NS2K.
JEK.
Go ahead, Don, and I'll get an answer after.
Yeah, my minister has a canoe with a trolling motor. He uses 2 6-volt batteries now. He's just thinking as the size gets out of hand, if you have 1 12-volt battery, that's pretty big and heavy. Maybe 2 6-volt batteries would weigh the same as the 1 big 12-volt battery, but then you'd still have, say that you'd have the capacity of a 12-volt battery and the 2 6-volt batteries, but it's easy to manhandle these things around. Possibility, too, to consider stored. Back to net, W2KK.
Sure.
K2BAR, this is KC2SQP. I was thinking about 2 motorcycle batteries myself, you know, putting them together, but I didn't know if they came out with Deep Cycle. And I know how Deep Cycle works, is I have it for a couple trolling motors myself. Back to the net.
That's the key parameter. It's all about the Deep Cycle part and the amount of electricity you can yank out of the thing over time. I think that's the real answer. Alrighty. Anybody else with further comments on this wonderful subject?
Hey, NS2K again.
Battery. Yes, no comment on the subject.
Hey, NS2K again.
I have to say, I've on the boat for, I don't know, 10 years, I think I used the same 2 size 27 Deep Cycle ordinary non-AGM batteries, and of course I kept them tweaked right up on a fairly continuous basis. I had a float charger on the boat, and so I kept them fully up. After about 7 or 8 years, I tried to run one of them down. I gave up. Even after all those years, it was surprisingly good condition. These were the house brand Costco things. Now, obviously, you're probably not going to want to do a 27 size, but I was really, really impressed with those batteries. NS2K.
What does a 27 size battery cost in Deep Cycle?
Oh, well, under $100. I don't remember. It was going back a number of years. Probably $80. I don't know. Remember?
Yeah, but I mean now.
I don't know. Of course, those are honking big batteries too. You don't want to have to carry them any more than necessary. But being intended for marine use, they had a nice plastic handle and the dual screw post connector scheme, so on. So they were fairly friendly that way as well.
Okay. So if you could find a carrier that would not shatter from carrying the weight of a number 27 battery in there, that's the other question. You put it in one of these rolling cases, you have to think about, you know, over time, blunt force trauma as you bounce the case around, you know, even on wheels, is eventually going to compromise the material underneath unless it's the material is set up to handle that. I haven't looked at cases for that, but the reason why I brought it up is because Gene, WB2HID, is looking to have the Fairlawn Club, build some things like that.
And so there might be some guidance there too, Stuart. So before you go out and buy anything, you might want to compare notes with Gene. He wants to compare notes with me, not tomorrow, but next week on Friday. I'm going to try to get over there to the Barra meeting, to the Fairlawn meeting next week. So, yeah, consider that as well. Anybody else? Let's see. Anybody else on this topic?
Who are you lying?
Woody.
You know, these smaller lead-acid rechargeable batteries that are used in things like alarm systems, what is their normal fully charged voltage? They're marked as 12 volts, and I find anything from 12.9 to 13.2, but never 13.8, of course. What is specified as the full charge open circuit voltage on a lead-acid sealed rechargeable lead-acid battery?
About 1 minute ago, or 30 seconds ago, you started to ask your question. I pulled the charge cable off of a sealed lead-acid that I started 2 days ago, and I'm going to measure it right now and tell you.
I've let it settle down. It might even be more than what the steady-state voltage would be.
But they're around 13.2, aren't they?
I have 13.05.
But never, like the car battery, I typically get 13.8.
Battery doesn't give you 13.8. All these will give you 12 volts under load until you beat on them a little more, and then it precipitously goes down, which is why you use a boost regulator.
Okay, well, I've got all my lead-acid batteries charged now, with the pending snowstorms that we've had. Again, I was happy to find they were all around 13 volts.
Well, in the first couple of days of every month, you know, there's summertime during the first week, I throw the batteries on, and I didn't last week. I really didn't need to. I threw them on, I guess, on Saturday, and so they're charging. So I did it on the first weekend of the month, and everything's working fine, to say the least. I charged up the 38 ampere hour battery that I referred to earlier. The 12 ampere hour batteries I have that look like small bricks, and miscellaneous other things. Every other battery I had for HDs and such. So we're all good. We're very much all good here. Alrighty. Any more on the subject of batteries, boost regulators, and things like that?
K2BAR, this is Stuart, KC2SQP. What was the name of that battery booster regulator that you recommended? I didn't get a chance to write it down. Back to the net.
November 8, X-Ray Juliet Kilo. The company's name is TGE, or Tango Golf Echo, but or TG Electronics, I think it is. But if you look up XJK boost regulator, you'll find it. And there's a whole family of them. I have the 100 ampere hour one that doesn't require a fan or anything like that because I'm using it off of a battery. Some people, if they're going to use it in places where there's plenty of voltage or but regulation is poor, they'll sometimes use, plenty of current, but the regulation is poor, they'll use it with a 200 ampere hour one, or 200 amp one, or 200 watt one, I'm sorry, but it has a fan built in to keep it cool. So this is the way we approach that. But you'll see a whole family. You'll even see one for marine use. It's sealed up tighter than a drum.
Thanks. Back to the net.
FYI, I use the basic model, and that's fine. I think the only one of us here who would have a reason to use the bigger fan-based one would be Jim, because he's got the 200-watt TS-480HX. I think that would be the only reason to have such a thing. At 40 amps. Cowabunga. Anyway, or something like that. All right, anybody else?